Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, August 24th, 2012, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kucharowicz, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals. We understand the problem, and we have the answer, Gold and Silver Bullion Investments. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 519-915-7542. We will be accepting email questions during the program, and you can direct those to mail at centralmetalscorp.com. That's M-A-I-L at centralmetalscorp.com. I'd just like to welcome our guest back this week, Jeff Dunphy. We had a to call off last week for the program, and I got a lot of emails from listeners that they missed the program and they can't wait to hear us again, Jeff. So people are paying attention and they're interested in hearing what we have to say. So that's on a good note. I sent out an email earlier this week, and I wanted to just start off with explaining what my alert was and why I made the alert and how people should consider it. Basically, I sent out an email to majority of my clients saying that it is time to seriously consider reducing your RSP holdings, okay, or completely cash out of your RSPs, or do it in intervals, 30% at a time or half or whatever. And this is not that I'm recommending that everybody take out their money out of their RSPs. No, I'm not recommending that. What I'm saying is that the conditions around in the economy and what's happening globally are so fragile right now that if you consider taking some funds out of your RSP, it might be a good idea because the rules might change. The idea is that you want to bring your assets closer to you. You want to eliminate any counterparties between you and your assets. Now, when you hold money in your RSP, depending on the assets that you own, you have, let's say, a mutual fund. A mutual fund has the risk of the actual fund. Then there's all the companies in the fund that they're holding. And then there's the bank that you're buying it through, or and the government. Canadian government can easily change the rules on RSPs, which is currently happening in the United States. There's a lot of people talking about that retirement accounts are going to be not really confiscated, but everyone's going to have to hold U.S. Treasury bills or government securities in their retirement fund. So what, in my opinion, what an RSP really is, it's kind of like a tab, or it's a debt to the government. So you're really, your retirement account, when people look at their retirement account and they have $100,000, you can't look at it as $100,000 to retire on. Because let's say worst case scenario, if you have to cash that money out today, you're only going to receive roughly 50 to 60% of that money because you have the withholding tax that needs to be paid back to the government, and then it's going to get applied to your income. I did provide on my website today a link to a Canadian tax resource, and people can click on there and you can see what your marginal tax rate would be. So basically an RSP is kind of like forced savings for individuals who are not disciplined enough to save for retirement on their own and who want a tax benefit now for whatever reason. But you're going to end up paying those tax dollars back to the government when you take money out of your RSP. Okay? So basically, an RSP is designed for tax-deferred savings, okay? And those tax-deferred savings are over your investment period, typically 20 to 30 years. People are working and saving for retirement. Now, what's attractive about the RSP is that, yes, you get a tax break now. You can reduce your income, so you pay less taxes now. But all those tax dollars are eventually going to have to be paid back to the government when you take money out of your RSP. And any trading that's done in your RSP is tax deferred, so you don't feel the tax hit now. But one thing that people fail to realize is that all the tax or all the profits that are generated in your RSPs are taxable at your marginal tax rate, 100% of your marginal tax rate. When you invest in a non-registered account, okay, all the capital gains or the profits that are generated in a non-registered account are taxable at 50% capital gains. Now, that's not interest-bearing gains, just capital gains. So if a stock goes from $10 to $12, okay, the $2 gain in that stock is a capital gain, and you're only charged 50%. The thing that a lot of people fail to realize is that if you hold a non-registered account, okay, and you do not trade in that account, you buy one stock or a group of stocks and you hold them for a 10-year period, let's say, and you do not trade, you're not going to be taxed on capital gains for that period until you trade that stock. Okay, and this is the key word is trading. People have to stop being obsessed with trading. Do the research, do your due diligence, buy a good quality a handful of companies or whatever investments you want to make and hold on to it. Don't trade. If you did the right analysis and you have a good broker or whatever, the thing is that your taxable event will not happen until you sell those stocks. So you're going to pay capital gains still, but you're only going to pay 50% of the capital gains. Whereas in an RSP, it doesn't matter how much you trade, or even if you hold the same stock, you're going to pay 100% of your marginal tax rate. So the tax hit is essentially bigger in your RSP, but you have the income savings, the short-term income savings on a yearly basis, which really what you're playing is the idea of the RSP was to, during your working years, you're in a high income tax bracket and you want to contribute to your RSP to lower your income so you pay less taxes. And then when you retire, you're theoretically supposed to be in a lower income bracket, and when you take the funds out, you're going to have a smaller tax hit. Well, I've, as many of you know, I've worked in the financial industry for years. I'm a licensed financial planner and life insurance as well. And I've seen many people that have saved for years, okay, and when it came time to them retirement, they had pension incomes, income from their retirement, income from other investments, that they were still in a fairly high tax bracket. So basically you're playing the spread between your current working year tax bracket and your retirement year's tax bracket. And judging from the link I put on the website to the tax information here, I'll give you an example. Let's say for 2012, we have in Ontario, for example, if an individual is making a taxable income of $60,000, your marginal tax rate is going to be 31.15%. Okay. And then when you retire, let's say you retire and you earn $40,000 income to live, your tax rate is going to be 24.15%. So that's basically a 7% spread, okay? Now, let's say for an individual that's making $100,000 a year, in Ontario, your tax, your marginal tax rate on your income is 43.4%. This is 2012 tax calculator. Now, I don't know many people who can live on less than $50,000 a year, especially if you're accustomed to earning $100,000. So let's use $50,000 a year that an individual needs to just live off of. Okay? So $50,000, your tax rate is 31.15%. Okay, so that would be a tax spread of 8%, roughly. Okay, so now when you calculate the rate of inflation over a 30-year period and you figure out the performance of your investments over a 30-year period, you're basically, you're playing that spread. And if you don't earn far above that marginal tax rate spread, then you're really no better off in your RSP, okay? Plus, the other thing is that you have to consider is that the government can always change the rules, okay? So what I'm recommending to people is to take a serious look at your RSP, okay? And if it's suitable for you to take some cash out, okay, you're basically just balancing your account with the government. This isn't a penalty. A lot of people in the industry, bankers, other financial professionals, call it a penalty. It's not a penalty because you owe that money back to the government. These are tax dollars that the government has given you as a benefit for your retirement. All you're doing is you're saying, okay, Mr. Government, I want to balance my account with you. Here's the money that I owe you. I'm just going to be responsible and manage my own investments. Thank you very much. I'm going to pay my tax bill every year, whatever my income taxes are, I'm going to pay you, and I'm just going to manage my own money. I don't need any tax benefits now because I understand what's going on with the financial world, and I just see it as too risky. I'm just going to take my assets home and kind of keep it close to you. So you have to look at your RSP from a different perspective. It's basically a credit account with the government, and in your retirement years, you're continually going to be paying those taxes back. So what I'm saying to people is basically just take a serious look at your RSP situation. I recommend, based on what's happening in the financial world right now, not to put any more money in an RSP. There's a lot of advantages, I feel, personally, to just keeping your money into a non-registered account or just keeping cash in the bank or gold and silver, physical gold and silver at home. The economic condition around the world right now is so risky and fragile that it is just basically it's time to be conservative and bring your assets home and eliminate as many counterparties between you and your assets as possible. So I just wanted to clarify the email that I sent out. And one thing that some websites are promoting, namely Jim Sinclair's website, which is one of the websites I follow regularly, is the direct registration system. And what that is a lot of people don't know that they have that option, but in, for example, a non-registered account, you can call your bank or the broker and take delivery of the actual paper certificate of the company that you own. Okay, I did it before with the bank that I had a few years ago, and it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't expensive. I received my paper certificates, I think, in a matter of a couple of weeks. And you hold an actual paper certificate. So you eliminate the counterparty between you and your asset, meaning the bank. If a bank has a problem or the brokerage firm goes down or whatever, it doesn't matter. You can take that paper certificate, go to a different broker, deposit the certificate, and it goes into your account. Worst comes to worst, you could take that paper certificate to the actual company themselves or to a transfer agent which is the institution that handles stocks between companies and the financial institution. So it's an independent organization. So a lot of people don't know that that option exists, but yes, you can. And most companies need to be registered in the direct registration system. Apparently, it doesn't cost the company anything to be registered in that system. So every company should be registered in the direct registration system to provide that option to people that want to take a paper certificate, and you can put it in a safety deposit box or put it in a safe at home. Again, you run the risk of possibly losing that certificate. If you lose that paper certificate, you're pretty much going to have big problems, because then there's you have to prove that you owned it and so on. So I just wanted to kind of get people to think outside the box, okay? And I think this is what this show is mainly about, is to get people to take a different perspective. As Jeff always refers to the normalcy bias, we got to get out of that, and people need to think outside the box. And it's just time to take a different look, step back and look at the big picture. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can email me or give me a call. Jeff has also provided his email. He's been generous with his time and helping people. So I just wanted to clarify that. And, Jeff, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think, Bosco, if you remember, some weeks back we chatted a little about the priest in the church with the coming flood. Is that, if we might, let's spend 30 seconds revisiting that wee story, and let's also spend a bit of time chatting a little about being complicit in this fiasco that we continually talk about. The flood is coming. The priest is preparing his flock, if you will, for the coming flood, and he organizes trucks to come and take everybody away. And they say, yeah, flood, we got everybody in the trucks, and we're going to drive to higher ground. And the priest says, it's okay, I'll be taken care of by God. A little while later, as the waters are lapping at the doors and they're starting to flood inside the church, he's starting to tread water, he breaks a window, gets on top of the roof, and a boat shows up. The boat shows up, grabs, tosses the priest a rope and a life jacket, and says, you know, Father, Father, come with us, we'll save you. And he goes, no. God will help me. God will save me. A little while later, while he's wrapped around the steeple of the church and the water is at his ankles, a helicopter shows up and says, here's the ladder. Get on the ladder and we'll save you. And he goes, no. God will save me. Well, a little while later, the priest is sitting at the gates of St. Peter, and he's looking at St. Peter, and he's pretty upset. And he's looking at St. Peter saying, what the dickens happened there? I thought you would save me. And St. Peter looks at his journal here, and he goes, well, just a second. We sent a truck, we sent a boat, and we sent a helicopter. What more do you want? So one of the things that both Bosco and I want to reiterate is this. When we turn the lights on in some fashion, it is not our place to impose on your actions. But it is our place to turn the lights on in such a fashion that you can be privy to our perspective on things. We certainly embrace the opportunity to discuss whether or not your perceptions or your perspectives are different, but we have a particular perspective on things, and this is what we feel is necessary that we expose on this very radio program. And there's a whole bunch of stuff involved. And Bosco, thank you very much for elucidating what's going on in the RSP. I trust that is useful to everybody. And now let's dive into a bit of the news, if we might.
Yes, Bosco, please. What do you have on your list there, Jeff?
Well, we have seen, and why don't we, for the moment, we've seen the price of gold go up quite dramatically over the last couple of weeks. Bosco, why don't you give us a quote right now on where gold is sitting, and we'll chat
right
a little about.
Yep. Okay, here we have.
Fire away.
Okay, I think looks like we might have a bad connection, but I got a spot price right now of gold, $1,669.50. And silver is at $30.60. So both metals have gone up quite a bit. Silver is up about more than $2 just this week alone. Gold is up, let's see here. Gold is up almost $50 this week. So we've broken technical, I guess, resistance levels. And part of that, I mean, I think we're going to be discussing some of the things. But, yeah, we've seen quite a move in gold and silver this week. And, Jeff, you have some comments on that?
Absolutely. Let's chat a little about macro at the moment, Bosco, and let's share some events that have happened in this last little bit, Beth. Now, to the Canadians, there's a guy in the Canadian business arena, and his name is Frank Stronach, and he built a very large auto parts company, and he is in Austria right now, challenging the euro's validity in the country of Austria and thinking that they may want to go back to the Austrian shilling, putting more pressure on the euro. The Greeks are now potentially in conversations with those who run the European arena as well, and there is consternation over all that going down, and here's part of the agenda of gold. We've got George Soros and Paulson buying gold, and we've also got the Citigroup guys withdrawing a bunch of money from the hedge fund that is run by Paulson. Mm-hmm. So we have a bunch of movement in macro stuff. We also have a conversation this week that talks about part of a conversation that you and I have had, Bosco, is on the rehypothecation of funds in futures trading models. We have the John Corzine story, the MF Global story, and we have a ruling that came out from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals about a little group called Sentinel that a few years back went up the stump, and now they've chosen to rule on this as saying, well, even in spite of the fact that it violated the very spirit of the law, these guys, we will allow them to use customer segregated funds in order to backstop their own indebtedness, which effectively now is a flag that we want to pay attention to because, and this is very important and everybody needs to take heed on this, what has happened in a court of law in the U.S. is they've said that your money in a brokerage account, in a futures commodity account, is no longer yours, that if the business that is managing your money or is using your money to trade on your behalf goes up the stump, the money that you have in that business is no longer yours. Okay? So that's a confiscation of your money in the court of law in the U.S. Now, this is called, we refer to it as you subvert the rule of law. And what is transpiring, in our opinion, and this is only our opinion, but what is transpiring now is that the powers that be, the J.P. Morgans of the world and the Goldman Sachs of the world and the federal government in the States is seeing that the calamity and the financial inevitability of the collapse of the market is literally on the horizon. It can be seen now. And they're starting to take action that might very well stipulate that everybody's money in the bank, everybody's money in their brokerage account, and everybody's money in their futures trading account, we've seen with John Corzine and MF Global, that they just slapped them on the wrist with a proverbial Nerf bat, Bosco, and mm-hmm. sent them on their... This is a confiscation of our funds. Now, Bosco made reference to in an RSP about taking account of and being mindful of counterparty risk. If, in fact, wherever you have your money held, if, in fact, whenever this calamity hits, and we don't know when, it might be in an hour, a week, a month, a year, whatever, your money may very well not be safe. Now let's chat a little about Mark Carney's conversation this week. Mark Carney, as you remember, Bosco, is the governor of the Bank of Canada, very much sought out. The entire globe is looking upon him as a sound, cool mind, and they've, you know, some very large institutions, global institutions, we would refer to them as global manipulative institutions, have asked him to come and join them or to run them or to be their head. He has been talking about dead cash in the banks by a whole bunch of Canadian companies. He seems to think this cash should be circulated into the economy. And in the throes of all this, we have a bunch of money sitting in the bank accounts of various banks of companies, various banks' accounts of companies. And now let's chat a little about the macro issue of this. The macro issue of having a bunch of money in the bank, globally, banks are charging people to hold their money in the bank. Can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, that you have a savings account and they take money out of your bank every month just to hold your cash? That is, in fact, what is happening with many companies, certainly in Europe. That's called a negative savings rate. This is relatively unprecedented. Now, companies, way smarter than Bosco and I, perhaps, are sitting on a bunch of cash because they're going, oh my goodness gracious, something is going down here that we just need to make sure that we have some liquidity. Or they're saying the economy is contracting so much that we need to have some flexibility. Okay? So now, you know, this is all over the newspaper, and it's hidden in plain view all over the business sections of all of the papers. Okay? We're now starting to see the price of gold climb. Bosco said 50. I mean, I remember a very short period of time, Bosco, but it was in the mid-1500s. That, to me, says $100. Silver was $25, $26, $27. It's now $30. I suspect with George Soros and Paulson going into gold a little more heavily, a lot of people are starting to say, oh my, maybe the timing of doing this is now. Well, I also want to talk about macro, what global threats speak to us. The first would be if we operate on the understanding that we are by nature collaborative and cooperative. We aren't particularly aggressive, and we aren't particularly pugnacious. We don't want to fight necessarily. Now, but I want to chat about what happens when we betray our natural predisposition of being kind, compassionate, caring, and cooperative. And there are three things that happen that makes us betray that nature, our nature of being kind and cooperative. The first is when we feel threatened. Now, we can feel threatened by a variety of things. We can feel threatened by a bear. We can feel threatened by, a global economic collapse. And we can feel threatened by somebody holding a gun or a knife or something malicious towards us. Now, when we feel threatened, we may very well betray our peaceful nature. When our family is threatened, even more so. We see this in the movies, don't we, Bosco? Tough guy comes up and goes, happy to have you pull out my fingernails. Everything's okay with that, but don't touch my wife and children. And so the torture guys, they go, well, let's just go after his wife and kids because he will capitulate to our wishes if we threaten his family.
Right.
So that's the second. And the third is when our way of life is threatened. Now, part of the expose that Bosco and I have been party to and privy to when we talk about world events, when we talk about global events, when we talk about current local events, is our threat. So that now let's chat about your economic threat, and that is, we do see that the monetary system is in collapse, and the powers that be are trying to manage it in such a way that nobody gets too fretful. We're seeing a Vietnamese businessman recently has just been called to task about manipulating the market, and there's been a run on that bank. I'm not sure if we have chatted about a run on the bank, but I want to reiterate what a run on the bank means, which is what happened to Lehman Brothers in 2008 when they just threw it under the bus and then took it over by bankrupting it. And then all the big guys, they consolidated their position. This Vietnamese businessman was accused of and charged, potentially charged, whether he's been found guilty or not is yet to be seen, He was charged with manipulation, and so consequently there was a run on his bank. Hundreds of millions of dollars were being yanked out of his bank. Now, that being said, just the rumor of the bank being in trouble when everybody goes to the bank to get their money out, we know that all the banks, if they say on their balance sheet that they have $1,000 worth of deposits in there, we know, according to the fractional banking reserve system, that the fractional reserve system, that they only have to keep 10% of that in the bank. And some aggressive banks in the States keep less. So if everybody shows up to get their deposits out, the bank goes under. This is called a run on the bank. Now, when we feel that our economic way of life is being threatened, we would suggest, and we have ourselves, gone to gold because we feel that the validity of the fiat currency system is at risk. When banks get run at, which they're all preparing for, by the way, certainly in our range of perspective, when banks get threatened, they start to take actions. And what we're seeing is the banks are going, oh my goodness gracious, we may very well have a run on us. And if that's the case, how can we protect ourselves? Oh, let's get laws passed that say all the money in the bank is now ours, which is what, in fact, happened with the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The law was just passed that said, yeah, everybody who is in a brokerage account, everybody who's in a commodities account or a futures, in with a futures commission market, yeah, the company can take all those funds and run with it, which is a bit shocking. Okay,
right.
So this would say that your money is no longer safe, and the government is colluding with the large financial institutions to expropriate your money. Okay, now let's talk about the mess in the Middle East. Let's chat about Syria. Let's chat about what's going on in Syria, where everybody is sitting back and allowing this thing to unfold, and the Iranians and the Israelis are throwing nasties back and forth via the media in such a fashion that they're trying to backstop their justification for being mean to the Israelis or mean to the Syrians.
Okay, Jeff, hold that thought for 1 second. I just would like to clarify something regarding the hypothecation of accounts. Now, on this program, when the MF Global scandal came out, Bob Chapman and I discussed that, and we went through the contract, the application that people go through when they open a futures brokerage account. And we discussed, and I actually read the contract from MF Global. I had the printed the application from their website, and I worked in that industry. I'm a licensed commodities broker in the U.S., and I know how it works. In the application, it clearly states that people's funds can be hypothecated, rehypothecated, and so on, exactly how you explained. Now, it's not their fault that people do not read the fine print. So you are basically willingly giving up your money to the brokerage firm who is going to be trading your account, and if they choose to speculate with your funds, okay, on some other investments, or put your funds up collateral to buy other investments, they have the right to do that because you signed that contract. The terms and conditions
right.
clearly explain. Now, whether or not that, I mean, people need to understand what they're doing in that industry, first of all. It is a highly speculative industry, and I don't recommend it that any average middle class or person, even professionals, shouldn't be trading in that industry based on the corruption that's going on right now. Now, what it was like before, it might have been different. And I think the key here, which I think you and I discussed on this program before, was the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act by the Clinton administration in 1999. Okay, the Glass-Steagall Act, which was initiated in the 30s, stated that commercial banks and investment banks could not commingle customers' money, meaning a bank is a bank, they make money on interest, and your money in the bank is only going to be used to lend out to other people for mortgages or bank loans and so on. They are not allowed to go and speculate in stocks or commodities and that kind of thing. If you want to open an account to do those kind of investments, then you have to put your money into an investment, a commercial bank. Okay, so I think this is what the fundamental problem right now is. And if we could, I know there's a lot of political action being discussed right now about reintroducing Glass-Steagall back into the system to separate the commercial banks from investment banks. And I think this is probably a good solution. So, you know, people need to understand what the risks are. They need to read the contract and call your broker and ask them, you know, if your money is in a margin account or a discount brokerage account, is that money being rehypothecated or lent out or used as collateral for other investments? So just ask your broker and, you know, make sure you have clarity on that. And this is, you know, where we discussed this before. You need to understand where your money is. And if you don't understand the counterparty risk between you and your assets, then take them home with you. Put your money in gold and silver, or put your money in cash, or put your money in a tangible asset that you know, whether it's a piece of land, agricultural property, a piece of real estate, whatever the case may be. When you know that you're comfortable and you can sleep at night knowing exactly where your assets are, then that's a good thing. Okay? So I just wanted to comment on that and, you know, just so the people understand that, you know, it's time to really take control of your assets, basically.
Great point, Bosco. And I also, one of the things that both Bosco and I make consistent reference to throughout this is we think that the system is broken. However, one of the things that happens through the expose of various websites to which we've made reference to and hopefully in small part by our efforts is that people are not standing idly by and in their inactivity being complicit to what is going on. They aren't saying it's okay by doing nothing. They're actually saying, well, in all fairness, perhaps I should take some action. And one of the things that I like to think and am optimistic by nature, optimistic in thinking, is that some of these people are being called to task. How dare you act in such a selfish manner as to screw the taxpayers, as to screw your depositors, as to screw the general population to your own benefit in playing games that are contrary to the benefit of all. And as things get more exposed and as the media can no longer squelch news of the vagaries of the large financial institutions and how they compromise those people that they make the money off of, we would like to optimistically observe that perhaps justice in terms of a fair act where everybody benefits as opposed to most people lose for the benefit of the few is certainly presenting itself to be on the doorstep. There is a calamity going on, Bosco. There is an end of one cycle and a beginning of a new one. We think, and we have chatted for some time now, that rampant selfishness cannot go unchecked for any period of time. It will run into a wall where everybody does realize that the selfish acts of the few are contrary to the benefit of the all, and it can't run its course until the few own everything. There will be a calamity, a catastrophe, and a collapse. Now, the beginning of the collapse started years ago, and we are in the throes of another collapse, or we are still in the throes of the same collapse. Let us trust that as forward, things will settle out.
Yeah, I think we're going through, well, over the past couple of years since 2008, after that crisis, we're going through basically the eye of the storm right now, and I think the other end of the storm is coming. One thing I wanted to address before we continue on with the situation in Iran, Jeff, is there's been a number of financial institutions that have come out recently, the CME Group, the LCH Exchange in London, FDIC in the United States, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. They have come out and classified gold as a 0% risk-free asset or as potential collateral for a loan. Okay. Now, what really they're saying is, and you have to look at the motivation behind it. Basically, they're saying gold is money, okay, which J.P. Morgan stated years and years ago. Okay. So your gold is as good as cash. Okay, the fact that it goes up and down versus a paper currency is really irrelevant. You look at gold as a standard. It's a standard unit of measure versus your cost of living. That's how you look at gold. Gold is basically your insurance to ensure that your cost of living and your standard of living is stable. Now, think about what they're doing. These institutions that are accepting gold as collateral, they're saying to you, give us your physical gold, we'll put it in our vault, and we'll give you a loan on your physical gold, which addresses the same situation what we just discussed regarding hypothecation. Okay? So these institutions are basically, in a sense, confiscating your gold legally. They're giving you a contract to say, we're going to take your gold on deposit, just like they took the cash on deposit in your commodities account with MF Global, and we've seen what happened with that. They want to, and I think what this goes to on a more of a historical, political, I guess, fashion is before, in 1933, they just put out a law and they said, we're going to confiscate your gold. They were very bold about it. Now I think what they call the, I think it was the tactics of, I guess, the Fabian Society, is a more quiet approach. We want people to do a certain thing, the psychology and whatever, how they control it. They're more sneaky about it, I guess, if you will. So they're putting out this information that, yes, okay, gold is money, which, as you and I know, and you expressed to me this week earlier that there's a lot more behind the reason for gold being money and what gold really means on a civilization perspective. But I don't think that our show is ready for that yet, but we'll get to that eventually. But anyways, gold is money. So they want your money because they know that it's the only real money in the world. And on a political fashion, between countries, just read history. Any major power, when they go into war and they take over a country, they go after the gold first. Where's the gold? We want to get it. Okay.
Sure.
So be careful what you do and where you send your gold. It's obvious that gold is very important. Gold is a fundamental monetary measure because otherwise these banks and FDIC wouldn't be including gold as a money or a financial asset with 0% risk attached to it. So they're confiscating. I think that they're putting out, opportunities for people, to give up their gold. And, I just want to, again, be careful what you do with your money. So, now, Jeff, the political situation that we were addressing.
Well, Buster, we're getting very close to the end of our program today. But, we can't overstate what Bosco has just said, ladies and gentlemen. What's happening now is that people are starting, the powers that be are starting to say, we will accept your gold as collateral so that when we go under, we have real collateral so that when we can screw you out of whatever it is you borrowed against and we have this as collateral. There will be a point in time, we are of the opinion, there will be a point in time when gold will be one of the only things that has any value because most, if not all, of the paper currencies on the planet are based on backstopping by a government. And this calamity, in our opinion, has the potential of creating a complete destruction of the financial, of the fiat currency system. We've seen the euro collapse relative to the U.S. dollar and the Canadian dollar. We're seeing many, many currencies collapsing. So we want to reiterate what's happening, and with that, I suspect we'll probably run out of time. Are we not, Vasco?
Well, I think it might cut out on live, so live listeners might hear us cut out. But, Jeff, we do have another 15 minutes, so we can continue. People, if it does cut out on the live program, just reconnect later when we have it up on the archives, and you can listen to the last 10, 15 minutes. So go ahead, Jeff.
Gotcha. Okay, so now we want to chat a little about what the large political systems and what the large powers would be do in these times of economic collapse. Now, historically, we aren't suggesting this happened, but we're suggesting that it might be a possibility. Historically, what they do is they start firing guns and bullets and grenades or rocks and sticks, right? And so consequently, this little fiasco going on in Syria right now has the very real potential of starting a much larger scale military event, which, you know, some might even coin it a third world war, merely because the Russians and the Chinese are saying, don't jump into the Syrian fiasco, Americans, Brits, Europeans. And the Americans and Brits are saying, well, the Americans certainly are saying, we owe China so much money that maybe if we go in there and have a wee bit of a conflict, we can write off what we owe them. This is never, ever a solution in terms of the calamity that it creates for the planet, but it certainly is a solution for ditching what you owe. You know, the old adage was, you know, if I owe you $10 million, and can't pay, I'm in trouble. But if I owe you $1 trillion and I can't pay, you're in trouble. So there's some simple rules, some simple things to ponder upon. And what is happening in plain view, many people are jumping up and down saying, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. But what is happening and what we want everybody to hear, pay attention to, and recognize is that their liberties, if you will, because their liberties are being compromised by the fact that the financial system that was put in place way back in 1913 by the Federal Reserve Act has come full cycle. It's run its course, and it is in the throes of collapse. Now, when that stuff happens in the throes of collapse, the guys that created the system all get together and say, what now? Well, the what now is, how can we make sure we don't lose as the system collapses? It's a very precarious time. It is also a time when those powers that be and those very wise guys, way smarter than myself and perhaps smarter than Bosco, who knows, but these guys are billionaires and are managing hundreds of billions of dollars, are getting out and getting into gold. I don't know. The Eric Sprotts of the world, Bosco, I would suggest are not dummies and have, you know, are very, very wise to the ways of the world. There is a reason that these individuals invest heavily in gold and are holding on to their gold and their silver. I mean, we've seen silver gone up 10% in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Is that the case, Bosco?
Yes. Yep.
10% in 2 weeks is not inconsequential. And we will see. Their time may very well be over. Who knows?
Well, this is what you know, we discussed briefly as well before. There is, you know, I can't help but repeat. It's gold is not something that you look to profit off of. Investing in gold is not a happy thing to do. It's when you decide to put your money in gold, you're making a political statement. You're saying that I feel that the financial system and the government is not looking out for my best interest. I'm going to go to an investment that at least I know I'll be able to stabilize my cost of living. This is what it is. It's insurance, because there's no counterparty between you and your gold. You hold it in your hand, it's yours. And it, you know, and a lot of people tell me, oh, you know, people that go to gold think that there's Armageddon and so on coming. No, it's a changing of the systems, and it's happened throughout history all the time. It always happens. Fiat paper currencies go through their high rise, and eventually they collapse. I know for a fact, I have personal experience with it. My wife lived through hyperinflation in former Yugoslavia, and she tells me stories, and it's not a pretty picture. When you have to wait 3 hours at the corner of the street for the truck to come to get your bag of flour that you can eat, you know, that's a terrible situation. The grocery stores are empty. People during that period in Yugoslavia were going to work, Jeff, and every day, and they were getting paid nothing. The fact is they had to go to work. Their boss said, you don't come to work, you're not going to have a job when this economic crisis is over. So people were still going to work every day and not getting paid for it. You know, they had the cost of traveling to work and so on. It's a terrible situation. Food is scarce. Energy prices are huge. And yet salaries are like $200-$300 a month. Okay? People were leaving work on a Friday afternoon with their paycheck in hand, going to the bank, and losing 20 to 30% of the value of their paycheck within that hour by the time they got to the bank. Okay? I'm not saying that this is going to happen in the U.S., but it is happening slowly. The value of your currency is depreciating. There was a report I was reading just today. Where is it here? That the amount of people in the U.S. that are on food stamps is rising and rising. Here it is. 20.5 million Americans have income less than $9,500 per year. This is according to a blog site by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. That site is paulcraigroberts.org. So, and you can read that article there. The situation in the U.S. is getting worse and worse. And one other thing that I wanted to just mention regarding the recent purchases of gold by these financial powerhouses, George Soros, John Paulson, and Jacob Rothschild as well. Now, for example, in the article here, I'm reading that, John Paulson is a hedge fund manager. He's taken a position on gold, and yet he's also taken a short position on the euro, which means he thinks that the euro is going to go down, the euro is going to collapse, and that gold is going to go up. Now, the hedge position on that is that gold is a function of paper currencies. So he's basically hedging his position. He's not, I don't even think he's sure, but one thing, he doesn't own the physical. He's taken the position in the ETF. And we're getting short on time, so I'll just make this quick. These guys are going in to make a fast buck. And for them, making 10 or 20% isn't good enough. These guys go in, they want to double their money, I think at least. Okay, and they really don't care what happens to retirement accounts, what happens to the citizens of a country. They're out to make a buck. They know the system. They know how to play it politically and so on. So, you know, again, like we always say, you have to take things from a different perspective and, you know, read the news, but you have to be able to read between the lines. And this is what this program is about, to try and help you. You know, not that we have all the answers, by far we don't, but we can try to steer people in the right direction and give them a different perspective with our combined experiences, myself and Jeff, you know, whatever we can offer as advice or direction. Hopefully people, it will benefit you, and if you have any questions, please give us a call. Jeff, any final comments here?
Well, I want to reiterate your observations about John Paulson. Now, John Paulson also made billions of dollars shorting the housing market in 2008, billions. And he made billions in a system. The system, the financial market system generally is a system where when somebody wins big, somebody loses big. It's called a zero-sum game.
Exactly.
The ideal system in all of humanity, the ideal system is when two parties interact, they both win.
we have been socialized and we have been hypnotized into thinking and believing that the system needs to be zero-sum game. Now, that being said, when John Paulson is shorting the real estate market and making billions, and he's now doing the very same thing with the euro, he's shorting the euro, these guys are not, one, inconsequentially informed, and two, stupid. They know that somebody's going to lose big when the euro collapses. When you've got Frank Stronach, the Magna guy in Austria, saying, let's get out of the euro, when you've got the Greeks playing, when you've got Spain and Italy, when you've got all of these places in the throes of collapse, the only reason the U.S. dollar is high is because the euro is collapsing and everybody's falling from one weak currency into a less weak currency. We have some calamities going on, ladies and gentlemen. This is not inconsequential. However, we are also of the opinion that running around yelping is of no use to anybody. There is a certain aspect of calmness to your actions. Pay attention. Take actions which feel right to you. Don't take actions out of fear. And don't take actions out of urgency. Take actions out of calm, collected, thoughtful consideration of the facts. Now, sometimes the facts speak for themselves, and sometimes the facts are manipulated in order to facilitate somebody else's agenda. It's more important to pay attention to your agenda and how best you take care of you and yours, because we are of the opinion, both Bosco and I are firmly of the opinion, that the government is not looking out for your best interests, nor are the banks. They are looking out for their own best interests, and when we fall back into what I've just explained as the zero-sum game, is that when the banks and when the politicians decide what action to take, if we play in a zero-sum game arena, you will lose and they will win. That's food for thought, and it's not particularly easy to swallow and easy to hear, but it is certainly something that you need to give diligent consideration to.
Yes, I agree, Jeff. Thank you for that note, and we're going to close off with that. So people, take the warning. We got to open our minds, think outside the box, take consideration, there's a link to Jeff's email as well on my website. So Jeff has provided his email for anybody who has questions. My email is on the website as well. So I'd like to thank you, Jeff, for joining us this week. And listeners, thank you for taking the time to listen to our discussions. And we'll see you again next week.
All right, Bosco. Thanks very much for allowing us to be of service, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Goodbye.